Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and I have a very special gentleman on the podcast today. His name is Jeff Schwiezow, and I was just laughing with him before because I just think that's the most extraordinary, fabulous last name, and it's got such a flair to it. So apart from his groovy last name, Jeff is a strategist, speaker, mentor, and author, and he's produced and published his latest book, Projectify. I think that's Projectify is the best way to pronounce it. How to use projects to engage your people in strategy that evolves your business. I love this concept and I can't wait to tease it out with Jeff. So Jeff, he helps businesses generate exceptional results and make their people a more powerful force by understanding the art and science of projects. He's worked with some of the world's biggest companies, including Shell, Chevron, PetroChina, CPB Contractors, Downer Utilities, PowerCorp, and City Power as well. So heavily into the utility side of things. Well, welcome, Jeff.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, Zoe.
So I haven't done much work in utility sectors, and I'm curious to hear a little bit about your leadership journey. So tell us how you evolved through your leadership experience and to where you get to today, where you talk about the art and science of projects.
I started life as an engineer. Well, I started life like everybody else, but I started my professional life like as an engineer, mechanical engineer specifically. And just my engineering journey took me to construction. And once in the construction engineering arena, I pretty quickly moved into project management, first managing projects, design projects in the U.S., where the world there is slightly different than it is in most of the rest of the world, quite honestly, but then moved into managing engineering on design and construction projects when I first moved overseas in 1998, and then finally got into overall construction project management when I moved to Australia in early 2000. So I've always kind of been a student of whatever game I was playing. And with project management, I pretty rigorously studied and applied traditional project management principles and practices. However, pretty quickly, I learned that those traditional approaches weren't necessarily enough to ensure success. So I started looking for different ways of thinking around how do we actually deliver results when we're doing projects. And that took me sort of down a path of a set of principles that I started using in the projects that I was managing. And then around about 2007, I learned that there was this thing called Lean that brought practice to those principles, if that makes some sense. But fundamentally, it really allowed me to explore this idea of the way to be exceptional in the work that we do for others is actually create exceptional workplaces, get people working effectively together. And the more I dug into that world and saw it as that improving the way that work gets done is the way that we improve the results that we produce for the industry, for our clients, for the people that ultimately are investing in these projects that we're being asked to do, the more I said, this is something that the industry needs. And that sort of drove me to start my own consulting practice. And what I learned fairly quickly is when you're in the construction process improvement game, that most of the work you get is on troubled projects. And so many of the early assignments that I got in my practice were projects that were on fire. And because there's nothing to drive different thinking like crisis, and the immediate need that sits behind those crises. And so although it can pay the bills, it's not a very exciting place to make a difference, and it's not the value-adding world that I really wanted to be in. And so I started to realize that I needed to approach the way I worked with the organizations I was working with differently if I were going to get them to move out of the day-to-day and start being more future-focused in the way that they applied different ways of thinking. And so that started me down this path of how do we actually create transformational change in a world that has people that are way too busy for transformational change? How do we get people focused on the future that their cup runneth over, so to speak, in terms of the day-to-day needs of their businesses? And so that started me down a path of how about let's use projects as a way of fixing projects. And that sort of strategic approach for my work started to expand into this idea, well, that sort of strategic thinking can be applied to any sort of businesses.
So let me just ask this clarification question. So taking projects to fix projects. So you take a project approach to fixing the projects. Is that right?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So, and look, at the end of the day, one of the things that people struggle with is the ability to bring the future into the present, because there's so much present in their face every single day, if that distinction makes some sense.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about using, I use the term projects, initiatives, activities, however you want to couch it, you start breaking things down into small steps. And those small steps for me were let's create a project that gets us to the next place where we want to get to in terms of evolving what we're trying to do, as opposed to we're going to completely change the way you do the business of construction projects. Because let's face it, there aren't very many executives that sit down and say, oh, that sounds like a fun undertaking, given that I'm already working 60-hour weeks can barely keep up with what I need to keep up with. So it's this idea of, first, I was trying to fix the construction project environment. And so let's use projects to apply to projects, because you're project people, certainly you understand that. And that then evolved based on conversations with different organizations I was getting a chance to work with, to say, well, it can be more than just fixing your construction projects. It can be the way you look at your business strategy as a whole, because at the end of the day, projects that you do as a business are fundamentally investments. So let's start maximizing our investments. Let's do some things that would give us a better return out of those project investments. And so that we're starting to shape the sort of businesses we want to shape into the future. You know, I've worked with oil and gas companies, and the reality is that a Chevron or a Shell has absolutely no interest in building a liquefied natural gas plant. They want to sell hydrocarbons. Mm. They build that plant because that's an investment in their business. That gives them the ability to do what it is that their senior managers, their shareholders, their business exists to do. And so that's sort of been the leadership journey, really, is I've kind of kept applying my own thinking and learning, how shall I put this? Applying my own thinking to the way I think and learning against the struggles that I was having trying to lead the businesses that I was working with. So that kind of thought leadership concept, if you will, even though I seldom say that, make the change that I'm trying to make within those businesses.
Okay. So it sounds pretty straightforward from the outset, you know, like let's take a project approach and you set an agenda, you make a plan, you implement. So I'm curious, what gets in the way of people actually getting the work done? So you talked about you wanted to improve the way the work gets done, and you started with projects that were on fire. What are the blocks and barriers to people doing work better?
The thing that I often like to say is in the world of doing projects, and this is true of a lot of different areas of business, we're heavily focused on the scoreboard. And we believe we can affect the scoreboard by focusing on the score. Where in point of fact, the way that you affect the score and the scoreboard is by how you play on the field. At the heart of traditional project management is the belief that we can measure our way to success, where in fact, the way that you make a project successful, or I believe execute strategy successfully, is that you get good at actually playing on the field, so to speak, doing the day-to-day activities that'll produce the results that you're trying to produce. You can't affect results by focusing on results. You can only affect results by focusing on the way that you work together to produce those results and ensure that, you know, you're focused on the right things. You're starting to manage your time and attention in a way that you're doing the highest priority activities at any given time to support what you're trying to achieve, either from a project result perspective or from a business strategy perspective. And so it's really getting people focused in on how do we work together to ensure that what each of us individually is trying to do on a day-to-day basis is supported by what everyone else around us is doing individually on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And starting to connect that all the way up to what is my strategic intent? So what am I trying to achieve as a commercial outcome? What am I trying to achieve as an overall strategic outcome? And start creating linkages right down to what people are doing on a day-to-day basis. Now, so that's where the complexity starts to come in. One of the fallacies about business strategy, as much as executing projects, is we create a plan, we go execute the plan. Well, what military strategists have known for a very, very long time is that, as to quote Eisenhower, plans are useless, planning is indispensable, because no plan survives first contact with the enemy. So it's that idea that we need to have a dynamic operational environment that is in keeping with the dynamic change that's happening in the environment around us, if that makes some sense.
Yeah. So it means being responsive to the given moment, as opposed to sticking with a plan no matter what.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so understanding that change happens, and our ability to respond and adapt to change is what makes us good. Mm-hmm. A white-knuckled approach to we're going to hold on to our plan irrespective of everything that's happening around us doesn't acknowledge the dynamicism and the uncertainty in the world that exists around us.
Cool. Well, I wanted to tease out a couple of things here from you. You talk about some of the key secrets to implementing work better. One of them was connecting what we do on a day-to-day basis back to the strategic intent of the plan of the organization, and that managing time and attention is another key. And the third thing you mentioned, which we haven't teased out, which I'd like to tease out, is how do we work better together? Do you mean around communication? Do you mean around conflict resolution? What does that look like for you, the working better together?
One of the things that is true about the modern business environment is that most of what we do today was born out of the scientific management movement that developed out of the post-industrial revolution. And that was put in place round about the turn of the 20th century. So most of the way that we organize our businesses fundamentally comes from the early 1900s and hasn't changed very much since that time. However, when you start to ask people, describe for me, if you will, a geometric shape that makes up your business. And usually they're going to describe some sort of a triangle that's sitting on its base, and the doers are at the bottom of that triangle, and the leaders, managers, whatever, are at the top of the triangle. And the way that hierarchy works from an operational perspective is that people at the top of the triangle have direct reports. They tell those people what is expected of them and assess them and tell them whether they've successfully achieved those expectations. And then, like Russian Matryoshka dolls, those triangles sort of make their way all the way down to the operational level. The problem with that from an operational perspective is that when you have people at different parts of the base of that triangle, if you can imagine the shape in your mind, trying to work together, there's some version of it has to go up the triangle and back down again to effectively interact.
Sorry, that was my phone in the background. I forgot to unhook it. I beg your pardon.
that's quite all right. So what we want in a more effective team environment from an operational perspective, what we want to do is we want to create an environment where the people that are doing the work together actually are responding to each other very, very, very directly. So they're making commitments to one another. They're planning and controlling their own work. So I often tell the story of a TEDx Auckland talk that I heard Michael Henderson give in, gosh, it was 2008 or 9, I believe it was. But he's a corporate anthropologist. So he's literally was trained as an anthropologist. That was his degree. And then he actually went out into the field and studied tribal cultures and then took that thinking to the corporate environment. And he said that when we talk to people about how would you describe your organization, and they describe a triangle. You go to a tribal culture and you say, how would you describe geometrically the way that your tribe works, and they generally speaking describe a circle, and it's a fairly flat circle, and the leaders are at the center of that circle, not on the top of a triangle, and then the people that sit around the leaders actually have specific responsibilities for the way that they make the tribe work.
So the leaders at the very at the very center, like at the where the radius is, or on the outskirts of the circle?
At the very center.
Yeah, so right, okay.
The people that are actually making the tribe work are around them.
Okay.
And so an effective organization, from my perspective, is one where the leaders sit at the center and their job is to help create that strategic direction, to support and enable the people around them that are actually translating strategic intent into action and activity. And if you will, a whole series of smaller circles that sit around them that are actually doing projects that are that strategic execution, that are translating strategy into things that move the organization into the future. And so what you want to create within those project teams are cross-functional groups that are made up of the people closest to where value is created in your organization. So if you're trying to improve an internal operational approach within your organizations, those are the people who most directly understand the way that operational approach works. Mm-hmm. And they potentially have a leader at the center of their little circle. But that leader's job is not to tell them what to do. It's to support and enable them. It's to ensure that they stay true to the strategic objective that project has set forth, and ensure that they kind of drive a continuous improvement engine, if you will, within those groups. And so those teams, if you will, make up the edges of the circle, if you will. So organizations, in the way I describe it, are inside out and outside in, as opposed to top down and bottom up. Mm. And so it's getting those people that are most familiar with this is the way that this business works. This is the day-to-day interaction I have with customers, getting them attached to the way that strategy gets translated into operational reality is the way to create a strategic engine, if you will, that drives the business forward. And then it's leadership its role is to ensure that you create a framework for constantly refreshing that strategic view, the strategic direction that the business is headed in. Because the world outside is constantly shifting and moving. And so your strategic objectives need to shift and move, both with what's happening outside the business and through feedback from your strategic project teams, the activities that they're doing, the experiments they're running, the sort of strategic work, the strategic findings, if you will, that help to inform that strategy moving forward.
So I'm curious about this, right? Because I love the organic nature of this. I love the inside out, outside in concept, and that the people at the coalface are really doing the implementation of the strategic direction. So my challenge with this concept is, now that we have cross-functional teams and projects, is that a lot of the clients I work with are on multiple cross-functional teams with multiple projects being implemented at the same time. And what mm-hmm. they struggle with is competing priorities. So, and also the person who leads the different projects. So they might have three different project managers that they're involved with and lead a project themselves. And so this juggling of priorities and commitments and visibility of workload is the two primary challenges. So how do you help organizations like that who have gone the project route and have cross-functional teams, but have this complexity about the implementation that causes confusion?
So one of the things that it's not unique by any stretch of the imagination to any one type of business or one any single industry, most people are struggling with this problem. And one of the things that we ask organizations to do when looking at their strategic projects that they're doing is to make sure that the strategic projects that you work on as an organization are the highest priority projects based on strategic value that you have the capacity to give your undivided attention to, that you have the capacity to complete. And as you say, the challenge comes in when you start talking about workload visibility. But if you start getting intentional about saying, okay, how many projects can we actually take on given our day-to-day operational expectations and given, you know, these multiple sources of projects that sometimes come from different places within the business. So it's that constant process of triage is the terminology that I use, of your strategic projects. So you're not trying to do too much. And so there is this view by many, many organizations that the more projects I start, either the more things I'll finish or the more optically I'm focused on the sort of things that are improvement or strategic focuses. In point of fact, the more things you complete, the more strategic progress you actually make. So you want to be very intentional about not overloading your organization with the number of projects that you try to do. And so that's a lot of the work that I do in setting up a routine of strategic project portfolio is what I call it. But a routine of refreshing that portfolio is an assessment of what are your strategic priorities? What are the things that you most need to be doing right now to move you forward in the way that you want to move forward? And what's your capacity to do those things? And it does force the organizations then to say, well, hold on a second, how many projects are people working on? And what are the source of those projects? So let's start getting more people into the tent, so to speak, that are making decisions about what strategic priorities are, and start to filter that down to our specific choices in any given quarter. And I go on kind of a quarterly cycle. Any given quarter, what things we work on during that quarter cycle.
So it sounds like a really intimate knowledge of people's capacity for delivery is essential here. Because I think this is the part that's missing in some of the organizations I work with, is that they they just have, as you say, they launch 100 different projects and expect their team just to stump up and deliver. And the team doesn't want to disappoint, so they go into overwork mode. Is that your experience too?
Well, worse yet, you get overwork mode, but you don't get results. You don't get the strategic outcomes that you're looking for. So what is the least amount I can possibly do? Not saying that people are shirking responsibilities, but if I want to say that I've accomplished something, what's the least amount I can do to demonstrate accomplishment? And so you really want to be intentional about saying this is the outcome that we're targeting. Let's understand each cycle of projects that we move through. What was our capacity? What if we didn't complete things? Why didn't we complete them? So be honest with yourself. Did we overload our teams? Did we actually achieve what we set out to achieve? So it forcing yourself into a cycle of self-reflection, if that makes some sense. I call it retrospection. Retrospectives is what we do at the end of each quarterly portfolio of projects. How did we go? Did we accomplish what we set out to accomplish? If we didn't accomplish it, why not? But what did we learn from it? So if we are overloading people, if we're coming up short because we didn't have the right people involved, let's start to understand that. And it's more art than science to know what your people's capacity is. Mm. And so you need to be intentional about gathering that knowledge as well as moving the business forward. And quite frankly, in some cases, actually building their capacity. So you suddenly ask people to work on a strategic project. Well, that's not necessarily their day-to-day job. There's things they have to learn about doing projects that they probably haven't learned in doing their daily operational activity. So you're building their capacity at the same time you're moving the business forward.
Okay, that makes sense to me. So when you talk about project management books, it's project management as a concept, as you've mentioned, is not a new thing. So what's different about your book?
Well, it's a book about projects that actually isn't very much about projects, to be honest with you, or at least not how to do projects. It's really a book about using projects as a vehicle for, as I describe it, traversing your strategic journey. And so I think I devote a whole 2 pages or something around pointers in how you might actually carry out these projects. So it's more how do you use projects as opposed to how do you do projects.
Okay.
And being pretty specific about what sort of projects we mean, how we want to approach them, and ensuring that you're constantly making meaningful strategic progress through your projects.
Are there any projects that people should not ever do?
What I would say is large transformational change projects are something that nobody should ever take on unless you're really good at projects.
All the change management specialists around the world just went, "Oh my God, heresy!"
Trust me, I'm an anti-project management guy, and I'm an anti-change management guy. but you know, the history with large transformational change projects is abysmal.
Yeah, that's true.
They just don't succeed very often, and more often than not, the reason you do them is because you have to. Mm-hmm. And so you're playing a pretty high stakes game. I've got a low chance of being successful, and I'm probably doing this thing because if I don't do it, my business is in trouble. So what I absolutely believe is it's much more important to break down large transformational change into much smaller, much more focused pieces that you move through stepwise. Not just because you'll be more effective in actually executing those smaller projects than you will a large transformational change project, for many reasons. Your skill at executing projects, the organizational capacity to execute the project. I mean, you got to continue to do your business. You dump a big transformational change project on top of the business. It's very difficult for people to actually have the capacity to do it. But also you start moving away from this world of fundamentally change management is managing people's resistance to change, theoretically. My belief is that people don't resist change. They resist uncertainty. Mm-hmm. People are actually pretty good at change. I mean, we're the most adaptable creatures on the planet. You know, my parents are technologically illiterate and they have smartphones and use Facebook and, you know, and that's all happened in, you know, less than a decade. So our ability to change and our acceptance of change is pretty good. It's uncertainty around change that we don't feel good about. If you actually get people directly involved in the change that you're trying to make and do that in a way that they can start to shape that change and break down some of that uncertainty, then you start managing that resistance. You don't eliminate it. It's still going to exist. You start to manage that, quote unquote, inherent resistance that happens to change because you're managing the underlying uncertainty around a big transformational change. Does this mean I won't have a job? Does it mean I won't like my job? Does it mean I'm going to be working with clients that are happy with me now that won't be happy with me in the future? Those kinds of questions inherently come into people's minds when uncertainty strikes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Uncertainty is the thing that rattles people's cages, and it's a very primal sentiment, that's for sure. Mm. So I have two questions left for you. Once, you know, the cover of your book, you got this guy juggling elephants. What's up with that?
When I was starting to plan my book, I went to 99 Designs to have a cover competition just to get a book cover concept. And I got a number of covers back, and one of the designs had the juggling elephants imagery on it. The final design has actually been tweaked since then. But it caught my eye because it was very, very different than anything anybody else was doing. And as I started to shortlist my cover designs down to those that I thought were the most likely to be eye-catching, for lack of a better way of saying it, I started sharing it with friends and colleagues and asking opinions. And the juggling elephants one drew more commentary than anything else. And first and foremost, it was either imagery that people loved or imagery people hated. And that interested me a lot because if you hate something, you've thought enough about it, or it's impacted you enough at an emotional level to generate that kind of a response. But then also, people almost universally tried to translate the imagery into meaning. So what, you know, what sits behind these juggling elephants? And so I got all these different versions of what my cover meant as it related to my book. So, you know, the elephant in the room was one of those, strategies like trying to keep a lot of balls in the air, and those balls are as big as elephants. The strategy is like eating an elephant. You have to do it one bite at a time, all kinds of different and different versions of what people were perceiving the imagery on the cover to fit with this idea of projectifying strategy. And I started to realize that, you know, in some ways, it's good that people are thinking about how the two things sit together. It almost doesn't matter what the designer had in mind when he designed it or I saw in it when I ultimately chose it. But that's what I wanted people to do with the ideas in the book, to start to understand how these concepts might be applied to them. How might it translate into their worlds? And if they engage with the imagery on the outside at an initial glance in that sort of way, hopefully they would engage with the ideas within the book in a similar way. And how might leaders make that linkage between the relationship that exceptional workplaces have with the future direction of their business and start to try to put these concepts together and have meaning around it.
Mm. Yeah, so I like that. I like, those are great metaphors everywhere. And I like the fact that you've got this provocative cover that can be translated in many different forms. I love the fact that you weren't prescriptive about it. That's great.
And I tried to figure out what the designer actually had in mind when he submitted the cover, but he's Romanian and he actually doesn't speak English very well. So we tried to communicate back and forth via Google Translator and I never quite was certain exactly what he had in mind.
Oh, that's okay. So my last question is practical tips for a business leader or manager. What can they start doing right away?
The first place we start is with what I call creating a strategic roadmap. So understanding your strategic intent, connecting that to what sort of improvement activities could we be doing that it would help us realize that strategic intent? And then what are the projects, what are the practical things, that initiatives that we could be putting in place that would help us seize those strategic improvement opportunities? And in very simple terms, if leaders always did was say, this is our strategic intent, the strategic intent for our business over this, our current planning horizon, for a better way of describing it, let's find the three best projects that we could be doing that would help us attack the improvement areas that would allow us to get to that strategic intent. Let's, around those three best projects, let's build cross-functional, closest to the workplace teams that attack those projects over the next 3 months. Create those projects in a way that we have a very specific outcome we're trying to achieve, and then support them in a way that allows them to move that forward. And then just lather, repeat, so to speak. And at the end of that time, how did that go? Did we achieve what we tried to achieve? And what did we learn from that? And now let's do it again. So just starting that, to get that sort of rhythm, if you will, around what are the three best things we could be doing strategically? And who are the best people to allow us to do that in a way that we've connected to what's happening at the value-adding front of our business, where the customer is, where the operational activity we're trying to improve is, where the product development activity lives. Just three things. What could we do with three things over the next 3 months? And let's build teams that are closest to the work that we're trying to improve.
That's great. And I love the fact that 3 months just sounds like it's a doable time frame. It's not overwhelming. And that kind of helps contain the scope of the projects, doesn't it? So it doesn't become bigger than Ben-Hur. You know, you've only got 90 days. So what can we pull off in this time frame?
Exactly. And then once again, what did we learn from that? So we apply that learning to the next 90 days and continuing to step forward. One bite at a time, little by little by little, and then you can start to see, okay, where might we expand? Where might we use what we're learning to feed back into our strategy, to redefine priorities and redefine our strategic focus and those kinds of things? But mostly you start to engage your people, and you engage them by giving them something to be engaged in.
Mm. Yeah.
And the fact that you have a very short, single focus project, that progress drives sort of that intrinsic motivation engine within your people as well. Okay, that was cool. We got something done. Let's go get something else done.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm going to put a link in the show notes, which will be zoerouth.com/podcast/projects to your book and to your website, so people can go and check out your juggling elephants and get a sense of the projects that you've been working on since you launched yourself into the consulting land. Jeff, thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, Zoe.